Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, July 8th, and do we have a show for you?
You were saying earlier, Randy, that you believe this may be a legit candidate for the best week of comics ever.
This is...
For this year. And I am compelled to agree.
Yeah, I've actually been keeping track this year on my blog of keeping track of stuff.
Right, your crazy notations.
My crazy notations
of seven style crazy journals.
Exactly, of my favorite weeks of each month.
Yeah.
This will most likely go down as this month, and I'll have to be comparing. This is possibly the best comics week of the year.
I do not keep up with it, but I can say that, like, you know, we read as many books as we can before this podcast.
Yep.
I've read, like, maybe seven comics or so. Every single one of them I either liked or loved.
Yeah.
There were no... I actually did not hit a loser.
No stinkers.
Nope, no stinkers.
No womp womp womp.
And by the way, when I say... And the ones I loved, it was like four or five of them.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
And to complete the spectrum, I can't say for 100% certainty that this is the best week of comics, but there are a lot to read that I liked.
Yep.
bring it down, Nick.
There's also a ton of news going into San Diego. Next week there'll be even more.
Yes.
But we got a bunch of news, and we have, as we talked about a little bit last week, the Marvel Now previews, which has 45 new comics that are coming out after Secret Wars. Wow. We're gonna each pick like a top five and maybe talk about some other ones. So that'll be a separate segment this week. We even had topics and stuff, talk about some board games and stuff, but that's probably going to have to wait till next week because it's so much stuff.
Yep. Although next week we'll have all the San Diego stuff, so we'll see.
None of the topics are that pressing. I just want to talk about how much I like Still So You Think You Can Dance.
Are we not going to be able to talk about the DC deck building game?
Maybe not. I already talked about it, you know, before you had played it.
But now I've played it.
I know.
It's old news, Dave.
But yeah.
Well, the actual release of it is like a couple years old.
No, but if we wait a week or two, maybe Nick will play it as well.
That's true.
I would like to do that.
So, yeah. No, but short version, we all liked it.
Yeah.
Anyway, first bit of roundup for store news. Magic the Gathering Origins pre-release is this Sunday. We still have room in both the 12 o'clock and 4 o'clock time slots.
Starting to fill up in the 12 o'clock one, but there's still, I want to say, at least five or six spots, maybe a little bit more.
As you listen to this, there are some spots. Reading with Rogues next week will be East of West, and that is going to be on July 14th. We're going to have that at BJ's Brewhouse, and... Nick and I both, of course, are getting the hardcover today. We'll talk about that. But we only have one volume one left in the store, so if you haven't picked up your copy, run down and nab it in front of somebody else.
Maybe there'll be a fight over it.
Ladies Night will be that next Wednesday, the 15th, and that's going to be at Kirby Lane. Then on the next Monday, the 20th, we'll be playing Takanoko at Kirby Lane for Gaming with Rogues. Looking forward to that. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but saw people playing it at my board game night. It looked like fun.
I didn't get a chance to play it at the board game night, and I can't go on Monday. I will never meet the panda.
No, you won't.
At some point, you'll meet the panda.
No, never.
All right.
And then we have some news. Following up on news that I believe we had last week, apparently Ava DuVernay will not be directing Black Panther after all.
Easy come, easy go.
Yeah. I think she met with Marvel. They both had different ideas for what the movie was going to be.
Yeah.
And instead of doing this a lot further down the line, she...
Like Edgar Wright did.
Yeah, she decided to go ahead and bow out now.
No. Somebody remind me, what has she done prior to Selma?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I was just wondering. Did she do any mainstream movies at all, or were they all kind of these more serious? Like what I think it was kind of like indie or serious drama movies.
Well, I think she was coming in intending to do more drama, and that's what they wanted with her.
Right.
But I think they probably were like, oh, and also you need to set up Infinity Gauntlet.
Has to be in it.
You need to set up Infinity Gauntlet in this, and she's like, I don't want to do that.
Right.
And I mean, that's...
Which I completely understand from some directors.
Oh, sure.
But Marvel definitely has a property, and she said she enjoyed Marvel properties. She played good PR.
Yeah.
So
this is a no-fault divorce.
Yeah, this is
going their separate ways. They just didn't work out.
I think Marvel movies are going down in flames.
This is kind of like the Edgar Wright leaving Ant-Man thing. Everybody freaked out about it, and it's like, it's just that someone with too much individual vision isn't the right fit for Marvel because it's always going to be a little top-down.
Right, yeah. You have to be a bit of a team player on that one.
Yeah, that's part of what Marvel does, is sort of a shared universe.
Yep.
You know, if you want to do your own vision, go over to DC and do something terrible.
Oh, snap.
However, Marvel's vision is not as clear as it always has been, because we're hearing that they may not know exactly what to do with Iron Fist yet.
Oh, yeah, right. I did hear...
Now, this is early goings. I mean, this isn't necessarily...
Well, I think it's just...
Well, they were trying to... Go ahead.
Well, I think the article was just saying that they were a little trepidatious to go with the supernatural, mystical stuff.
They weren't sure how much the mystical stuff to include.
But I guess this is... I mean, before Doctor Strange comes in, I mean, you're going to have to tackle that subject with that, and you can...
But they dodged it with Thor. They have not done anything definitively mystical in any of their movie verse, right? Am I missing anything?
No, they haven't really.
But with Doctor Strange, who is the...
What if they said, you know, what if they begin with that quote from Asimov or whatever, you know, any significant or sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah, whatever. Some science guy.
I'm just saying, I know our audience and someone's going to email us.
Yeah, probably so.
I mean, I just don't see how you kind of... Forgo that with Dr.
What
Strange.
What if he is manipulating matter on a quantum level?
Quantum level. Yeah, I can totally see that.
And he's doing it sort of psionically, but he uses keywords and
but
phrases.
But they're not going to do that.
No, I think you have to sort of jump into that kind of stuff with Dr. Strange.
I mean, I want them to do magic, but I could, you know, I wanted them to the Asgardians to be Asgardians, and instead they made them space gods.
Yeah.
And I was able to work with that. I thought that fit the movie verse pretty well.
I could be completely off the mark, and they'll do that sort of. It's
I'm going to go ahead and say he's a quantum manipulator, and that'll be my bet.
What are you, Warren Ellis?
So it'll pay
but
off.
But with the
big,
knowledge of
right.
them doing the Ancient One, and you know, a couple other things that are sort of important.
I'm with Nick. I'm Team Mystic here. I think I know that's what you want them to do.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're going to do. Yeah. I can't see them doing the Warren Ellis take, the quantum manipulation,
the
all that kind of stuff.
The Ancient One could just be a guy who discovered this quantum manipulation.
A girl.
It is Tilda Swinton, sir.
She's androgynous. I can call her whatever I want.
It's possible. I don't think so. But the notable thing here is Iron Fist, because as is pointed out in many articles, if you do Iron Fist without the Iron Fist... He's just a kung fu dude. You're doing Daredevil again. You're doing,
But he is going to be Shang-Chi. Appearing on the shows and stuff with Daredevil. Should be a little, you know, like... I'm trying to think who else... Like Luke Cage is going to be in there. We know he's got to have some powers.
Yeah.
And also...
I was just wondering
this
if this was going
to
be...
say all this, but in the Daredevil show itself, they've set up mystical stuff.
Yeah, they did. They set up Kunlun.
So, I mean...
Did they set it up in a mystical-y way?
Well, very much so, yeah.
The episode of Styx, sort of doing a stone and sort of...
Not even that. Madame Bao or Madame Gao.
Well, yeah, Madame Bao is part of Kunlun and all this other stuff. They've set it up, and this article is just like, oh, they don't know. And
it's going to be other dimensional. I mean, clearly it's other dimensional, and that they can do without doing magic. But chi manipulation is not magic. That's sort of that's a slightly mystical hoodoo thing. But you could call it science. You could call it Eastern science if you wanted to. I mean, if he doesn't at some point have a glowing iron fist, I'm going to be very disappointed in the show.
Well, it could be like sort of one of these things where he can push things to the absolute edge and even like punch through metal or something like that. But it's still somehow considered to be within human parameters.
Glowing fire hand or nothing.
Exactly. I'm just saying, Last Dragon did it. You tell me Iron Fist can't.
Now, Last Dragon clearly needs to be incorporated into the Marvel movieverse.
Yes, the Shonuff
prequel.
Shonuff should be the original Steel Serpent.
This is complete. I was going to change subjects.
Well, I was just going to say. I imagine that if they're doing the magic thing, and also as they're working on the script, presumably for Doctor Strange, they're probably trying to figure out. How are they going to do the time-honored age-old problem of rules for magic? So they're probably trying to figure that out.
I imagine they are. But I think everybody has this idea that Marvel has this grand plan, and they do. They've got stuff planned out till like 2018,
right?
But that doesn't mean they have the details. All they've got is sort of notes along the chalkboard.
Yeah.
So this isn't worrisome. It's just interesting to know that they're
still
working it out.
Yeah. And the only thing I was going to mention is, are you seeing, production stills and things that they're working on Daredevil Season 2?
Yep.
So, it's pretty crazy. They've already started shooting and filming that, so...
Yeah.
We're going to see Punisher on the screen soon.
Yes.
That excites me.
Well, people have said, there's been stories that basically Season 2 is Daredevil versus Punisher.
I know. I've seen those rumors, and if those rumors are true, that is awesome.
Yeah, it's like someone went to Nick's head and was like, what does Nick want for Season 2 of Daredevil?
And they cast them perfectly.
Marvel seems to be doing a good job of sort of the crowd pleasing thing. They seem to have an awareness of what people want, and not less. I don't think they're like pandering. I just think that they're tending to pick the cooler ideas with their movies,
right?
And Speaking of TV, we got that Legend of Tomorrow promo still, or right. promo art.
Which looked like art for a scene we've actually seen in the previous section, yeah, the big warehouse fight.
Yeah, them all fighting.
Like robots and stuff.
But Dave, you thought the log line was interesting, because it said basically they're sort of screw-ups.
Yeah, they talked about them like, you know, and I don't know, I couldn't quite tell how dramatically they were going to play it, but I saw that when people were, like, looking at comments on it, people wanted, like, this to be the Justice League International.
Yeah.
They wanted that, they wanted, and I don't know if anybody really wants that goofy.
They don't. They think they do, but they don't.
Right. It turned it into a comic.
And I want to remind people, while Justice League International did have goofy moments,
yeah.
it also was pretty damn serious at times.
It was.
But its goofy moments were like sitcom level.
Yeah.
The goofy moments sort of shadowed everything else in a lot of ways. People remember the Booster Gold and Blue Beetle humor more than they do maybe Blue Beetle getting mind wiped and a lot of the darker subtext that they did.
The other thing about it is the team is very Justice League International. Yeah, I mean, it feels like JLI in a lot of ways.
Right. I think that'll make for a lot of like sort of fireworks and good, you know, foils and stuff for each other.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to make it like I doubt they'll go full comedy. No. I think they're going to have them as a team that is trying to figure out how to work together, how to trust each other. There'll probably be a fair amount of humor associated with it. But that sounds like a good blend.
I imagine the Flash tone is very close to what we'll get. A little light, but not goofy.
Right. Sort of a more like dysfunctional, but not like wackily comedic.
Then we saw a trailer for, this surprised me, but apparently Nick already knew this was coming. Minecraft has a new game coming out from Telltale Games, the guys who do all the story games.
I knew it was coming. I didn't know the people who were involved.
It's a stunning cast of voice talent. I mean, the only one I remember off the top of my head is Patton Oswalt as the lead character.
I think Paul Rubens is involved.
Paul Rubens, yep.
Patton Oswalt. There were a bunch of people.
I understand
people
that there's
involved.
Some money to be made in Minecraft.
Yeah. Well, and there's a trailer up for it, so.
Yeah. I watched it. I've never played a Minecraft game. I kind of know they're sort of Lego-y type games.
Yeah.
Although I don't know quite what the game, what you do in them. Are you trying to build things before timers run out?
Play in survival mode, which a lot of people do. My kids don't. They play in creative mode. If you play in survival mode, you basically need to build yourself a house before night when all the zombies come out.
Right.
Yeah. I knew that there was some kind of time.
There's zombies, spiders,
creepers.
It's like a sort of a big fantasy story.
Yeah.
And I have seen, like, in those Minecraft books we have, they're like the Dwarf King's Halls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And what I didn't know is, like, is that in some way part of the slight narrative that they have in the games? Or are they just cool things that you can build?
I think it's just cool stuff you can build. I've seen people, and especially in free mode, where people are building just insane amounts of things.
Yeah.
And with such level of detail.
And there's all kinds of mods. People did, like, Star Wars mods. And
it reminds me of the, I guess it was Clickhole that did the Game of Thrones Minecraft. It's a video that you need to see. It's spoofing the "this fan made an amazing Minecraft Game of Thrones tribute." Just look it up.
But I think this will be the first time we've seen an actual story for Minecraft.
Yeah. Well, and it's an interesting thing for Telltale to take on.
Yeah.
They're going to give it a strong story no matter what. I'm sure it's going to have a good driving narrative and fun decisions to make.
Yeah.
But I guess it's got to be like a pretty all ages thing.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see what they do. I think of games like Mass Effect as being, like some of the stronger story-oriented games with story choices, which is what Telltale does.
Yep.
But you're not going to want to throw out heavy-duty Mass Effect choices at kids.
Right. Do you stop the creeper or do you save your friend? Okay, so a bit of comics news. There'll be lots more next week, but there's a little bit of dribbling out before San Diego. Both of them involving creators from the UK. Both of them kind of surprising. The small one is that Warren Ellis is going to be doing a James Bond comic for Dynamite.
Warren Ellis will whore himself out for anybody.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, I'm sure he has a fondness for the British badasses.
Yeah.
He's probably going to be... Or
he wants to show him how to do it right.
No, I bet... I mean...
I bet he has a fondness.
British, smoking, womanizer, always in control of the situation. That is Warren Ellis' Mary Sue character all over the place.
I guess so, but I would think he would also find him kind of... arrogant. Although he's doing the Born book Ellis Bond.
Always writes arrogant.
That's true. I mean, Elijah Snow.
Time that we saw a Brit guy do it was when Alan Moore completely undercut and subverted the character.
Alan Moore's not British.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Alan Moore's not British. He's a magician.
He is a pagan.
He has ascended above any of our human concepts of nations.
He's an acolyte of Glycon.
Yes, he's an acolyte of Glycon. He is a nation of one.
What his race would be as a D&D character.
I think you're forgetting his beard. He's a nation of two.
You're right. I forgot the beard. The Beard has a separate armor class.
It's very true.
And you have to kill it before you can kill Alan Moore.
Yeah, it's got its own hit points.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But I think this sounds cool.
Yeah, I do too. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's right.
The tree and all that other stuff really well.
Oh, and his sort of blending, I mean...
Although he's going to do more of the book thing, so that means a little less gadgetry, although some.
Now, I don't know the answer to this question, but has there ever been a James Bond comic? I mean, I know...
Yes, there have been numerous ones.
Have there? Okay.
Doug mentioned Paul Galassi did a very good one in the 90s.
Right. And I know there's...
remember it was okay.
It was good.
And
it was,
I know there's been some all Mike ages.
Grell.
Like
Mike Grell did one. Yeah.
Silverfish and everything. I just didn't know if there had been like an actual...
It seemed like First Comics and some of those slightly smaller indie publishers handled them throughout the 80s and 90s. And it was always like a mini-series.
Okay.
There have, in fact, been so many James Bond comics that our good friend Alan Porter wrote a James Bond in the comics book.
I forgot about that.
So, yeah.
What I remember is that I like the Grell one the best, and then I think the Galassi one right after that, and then there's some other sort of forgettable ones.
Yeah.
Did it say who the artist was? I'm just curious.
I don't remember. Okay. They did, but it's not a name I
It's
knew.
Not a name.
Yeah. They did ask in the interview, I noticed, how they came up with the artist, and they said that Warren Ellis picked him, and he has such a good track record of picking great artists.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like he always picks his artist.
Yeah.
That I imagine it's going to be pretty good.
Cool.
And then there's news from the land of Scotland, or I guess he's also a nation of one. Grant Morrison is becoming the editor-in-chief of Heavy Metal magazine.
Yep. This actually makes complete sense.
Oh, sure, absolutely. He feels like a guy who should be in charge of something weird like this.
But he is more heavy metal as it was in the 70s, where it was kind of like more Mobius, Euro, high concept.
So you think
sci-fi?
He's
going
to take it back to that?
And it had become,
well, he said he was.
Oh, did he? I didn't even hear this until just now.
Very TNA and sort of violence-oriented.
Yeah.
When Kevin Eastman,
it's a little metal. It's a little metalish. It became very metalish.
For those who don't know, Kevin Eastman, the one of the Ninja Turtle co-creators, who was flush with like untold millions from the turtle stuff, bought Heavy Metal sometime in the 90s. He married Julie Strain, who was the like softcore actress, who had also, I think, been a model for some Heavy Metal books and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, the book had been kind of deteriorating into kind of softcore.
Yeah, more or less. And the thing is,
is he still in charge?
He is still involved. Like, he didn't sell off his shares, and he's in favor of this.
So
he
just
said,
changing direction.
He said, this is great. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. So, I'm looking forward to, I mean, we don't order Heavy Metal off the shelf. It doesn't sell that well, but we're going to start ordering it.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see, and he's reaching out to some of his, like, Fraser Irving and some of those guys, so...
Oh, I'm sure they're going to jump at the chance.
Yeah, so we will probably see some pretty great comics out of this.
Cool.
I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun.
A heavy metal movie directed by Grant Morrison.
And music by Blue Oyster Cult.
Yes, sure. Yeah, once again. All right, that wraps up our rounds of news. We will have, like I say, lots more next week. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back, not with our comics for the week, but first with a look at the all-new Marvel Now that is coming up in October. All right, it is time for a special segment on the all-new, all-different Marvel Now. So
I guess they are appropriating, they have a new sort of... what would you call it? A prefix for each new sort of like an initiative now.
Yep.
And it's funny because the all new, all different is something I think was first applied maybe to the X-Men.
It goes back to,
when the new team came in with Wolverine and Colossus and Storm.
Yep.
But it actually goes back to 1975 or something.
So this is basically post-Secret Wars.
Yep.
And we don't know what the world's going to look like because we're only halfway through Secret Wars right now.
Right. And it's still...
And my guess is this won't actually happen in October because the Secret Wars is not going to be on time. It's very optimistic of them to be thinking this is all going to happen in October.
You know, with this big of an initiative, I might be a little bit surprised if it doesn't launch
but
in October.
But how are they going to make Asad Ribic work faster? Are they going to chain him to his desk? How are they going to do that?
Yes, they're going to do
that. All right, we'll see.
Or, I mean, if they get desperate, they might bring in another artist.
He is artist on Secret Wars.
Yes.
But is he also working on anything in the new...
No.
Okay, well, here's the question. Do we think that there's anything that this would in some way... I mean, I guess it might spoil...
Yeah, it spoils the ending. They can't do it. They can't put this out before...
Secret Wars has to
end. I mean, I bet a lot of the books probably won't necessarily reference
the... Well, they're going to... I mean, here's the thing. In Secret Wars, there's only Battle World. Post-Secret Wars, there's nothing besides Battle World. So
that's true.
They have to spoil it by its nature.
One thing that, just as a general thing, looking at it, it does not seem like... It, I mean, this confirms what kind of we knew, but it's not like a full reboot.
No, it is not a reboot.
There will be new number ones of all the Marvel comics, but...
And there are going to be changes.
There's big changes, but it's not like we're recreating Marvel from the ground.
Right. No, this is not... It's not even like a New 52-style reboot. It's basically... A lot of stuff's going back, and a lot of stuff has changed in Secret Wars. Some characters looks like maybe sticking around from other dimensions.
Correct.
The big defining thing is that 8 months have passed since the end of Secret Wars.
And that's just a good sort of way for them to start...
Yeah.
Stories in a fun way.
Yep.
You don't have to do like this exactly happened right after Secret Wars.
So there's new people under the cowls of some of the costumes. There's there's some characters who were in other worlds who are not in ours now. There are new teams and there's a lot of new creative teams. So we have these books now. They are freebie books that have, like 60 pages.
And it's got like 45 new of the new comics.
Yeah, just little one piece of art and the creative team and one little tagline for what the book is.
So we're very much guessing as to which ones personally interest us or jumping out at us.
So we each picked five. I believe Dave may have cheated, picked a sixth.
Sort of.
Well, we'll see.
That's on my list.
And we actually all have, we all have interest in more than five, but we just got to pick five to talk about. So we're just going to go around and talk about these. And if you want to see any of this stuff, as long as we still have the books, you're welcome to come in and pick one up. If not, I think all the information is online, like comic book resources, all
and
that.
And I know with San Diego coming up, I think there's 15 more that are going to get announced.
It's just that the magazines are pretty.
Yep.
And one of them better be Squirrel Girl.
Oh, Randy's going to be so upset.
Yes, I will. If there's no Squirrel Girl, Randy riots. Dave, why don't we start with yours?
Yeah.
Okay, first one I've got is the kind of humorously titled The Totally Awesome Hulk.
Totally Awesome Hulk. Yep.
The art for this, I guess the writer is Greg Pak, who is the main reason I'm excited about this.
Yep.
And he's written one of the defining Hulks.
He wrote World War Hulk and Planet Hulk.
Yeah. Yep. Made it an awesome book.
Yep. And Incredible Hercules.
The Hercules that followed that, which was also really good. And he's over at DC, he's been writing a pretty good run on Action Comics that I've been enjoying. The artist is Frank Cho.
Famous loudmouth Frank Cho.
Best known for his Babes and occasional loudmouth.
But he's a good artist.
Yeah, he is. I'm sure he can draw a heck of a Hulk.
Yep. I almost feel like he's drawn... He drew a little bit of the Red Hulk. Really.
Oh, did? Oh,
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, with Loeb.
Yep. But anyway... the preview art shows big, Hulk's big muscular physique, but his head is completely in shadowed or blacked out.
So is his other fist.
Yeah, and the tagline is, "Who is the Hulk?"
We're guessing Amadeus Cho.
Yeah, we're guessing Amadeus Cho, the super smart kid who's occasionally been like a sidekick to him, I forget exactly why, but he had kind of a hero worship thing for the Hulk.
Yeah.
Hulk had saved him or something.
Yeah, Hulk saved him,
And we're basing that off of the hair...
Right, and I bet that, that
and the shadowed, totally awesome.
That shadowed arm could be like a gauntlet, like some kind of tech gauntlet or something.
Yeah,
it is.
Or the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
he's completely different because he's not sporting the purple trunks anymore. He's got, blue and yellow trunks.
It's true.
Yep.
I don't know. I think it could be a lot of fun, especially if they use Bruce Banner, because he's not mentioned anywhere else in this book. As sort of a mentor or something along those lines. I know I've said that about a couple other books, but I like that.
You like the mentors.
I like the mentors. I think that's kind of fun.
So, what about a dementor from Harry Potter?
Interesting.
Interesting sidetrack. I don't know. Not knowing, I'm going on the creative team and on Pak's history.
Yeah.
And if it is Cho, which we think it will be, I have liked that character quite a bit. So.
Well, and I think Greg Pak wrote the sort of. Did he come up with that character?
I think so.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
Pak created.
He's been utilized
like in a little
mini
series or something, wasn't he?
It was a backup story.
Series.
Yeah.
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 He's been utilized well, but I mean, like by Hickman and Secret Wars and things like that. But for the most part, I mean, Pak wrote the defining and best version of the character.
Yeah.
Nick, what is your first pick?
My first pick is a weird one. I will say this.
A lot of your picks are weird ones.
Okay, fine. Do that way.
I'm just saying.
What do you mean?
I'm just saying.
Nick embraces the strange.
Nick is embracing the weird.
So I will pick Venom Space Knight, number one. And this is actually for two reasons. The creative team is interesting. Robbie Thompson, who I did not know until his work on Silk, which is what he's been writing.
But apparently he's a big Supernatural writer.
And he was a Supernatural writer, and I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen his name in many a credits, and
sure.
I just kind of
passed
by
him.
Passed by it. But I like his craft. I think it's interesting. And the artist is Ariel Olivetti, who...
does nice painty stuff.
He does nice painty stuff. He's not usually my favorite, but I kind of can see how he can work with Venom. I mean, he worked on, what, Cable and, like, the...
Oh, he's... I don't even remember.
I think the first thing I ever remember reading was
that Space Ghost miniseries.
That's right.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
There was an Avengers, like, in the future, like, years and years and years ago, that I remember reading. That was the first thing I remember from him. Yeah. It was
kind
interesting.
Of a realistic style, but also a little superhero-y.
Yeah, and the notion of sort of Venom as a hero in space... Is,
well, he's already been with the Guardians of the
Galaxy.
He's
part of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and he still is.
Do we assume that this is Flash?
This is Flash, right?
This has got to be Flash, unless it's somebody else.
Although the costume looks more like...
Yeah, he doesn't have his Flash gear.
Nope, he does not have his Flash gear, and he's got sort of a more angular-looking face. No teeth whatsoever.
Yep.
Well, it would be still
space
so he could breathe.
Yeah, he's in a spacesuit breathing. But, I don't know. I'm a quasi-fan of Venom. I think, like, 12-year-old Nick loved Venom, as all kids did. But if the concept can work, because, I mean, Remender made it work, and then we've seen from them, I really like the notion of Flash Venom, so...
And we have no idea quite how they'll be using the Space Knight thing, but that is, of course, a harkening back to Rom, of all things.
Come on, let's see Rom and Venom clash.
We aren't going to see Rom. Like, yeah, they don't have the rights to
but,
Rom.
But, I mean, in the picture, we have these weird space piranhas that have, like...
Alien teeth.
Alien teeth, which look really, really cool, and he's like... Venom has a like an alien person who's riding him, and
that
is another sort of creature that he's holding hands with. So he's friends to aliens.
I think I told what it was. It looked like upside down. It looked like it could be like a space.
No,
monkey.
And honestly, it looks like he's saving these people from giant space piranhas, which I like.
Seems like the kind of thing that that Venom Space Knight might do.
Exactly. I think it's just out of left field, and I think it could be a lot of fun. That's why I picked it.
Yeah, no, I think it could too. I'm curious. My first pick is a book called Web Warriors, which is it's going to sort of spin out of the
Spider-Verse
stuff,
right?
Yeah, and I'm just looking for the creative team here. I think it's toward the back.
That's a good creative team, if I remember correctly.
I believe it is Mike Costa.
Yep.
Who? Yeah, there it is. Mike Costa, who you might know is the guy who co-wrote or wrote a lot of the G.I. Joe Cobra stuff.
Yes.
Artist by David Baldion, who I know but don't recognize off the top of my head. And the cover is basically this painty-looking thing that has Spider-Gwen, whatever they're calling... Aranya now. Maybe another Spider-Woman. Spider-Man India, Spider-Ham, Spider-Man UK, and Spider-Man Noir. And it's called Defending the Spider-Verse. So this is sort of picking up where Spider-Verse, not the Secret Wars one, but the original one left off, where these guys are standing in the nexus of realities... Protecting reality from interdimensional threats.
You know, Spider-Verse was such a fun time. It's no surprise, and a surprise hit, or maybe not a surprise to Marvel, but I did not necessarily expect it to take off, and instead they did a great job with it.
Yeah.
So I can easily see the continuation.
Yeah, but this is, I mean, just having Spider-Ham as a regular ongoing is pretty great, and along with Spider-Gwen and Peter Parker of India, and there's a lot, it's going to be fun book.
Did y'all say, is Spidey Noir...
Spidey Noir is in there as well, yes.
Yeah, he seems to be a popular favorite, too.
So it's if you liked Spider-Verse, this seems to be sort of the continuation of it, and I'm looking forward to where they go from there. Dave, what's next on your list?
This one I don't have a ton to say about. Scarlet Witch, number one.
Yeah.
I have always kind of liked the Scarlet Witch. When I got into comics, my friend who got me into it, it was at a time when she was the Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries was first coming out.
Yep,
they were. I'm going to say they were a Marvel power couple.
Yeah, they were.
And
what's the power couple name? Scarlet Vision. Scarviz.
The Scarlet Viz.
Scarlet Viz.
You know,
yeah,
they used to call him Viz.
Yeah, that's Scarlet Viz. You're right. Scarlet Viz. That's her power couple name.
Yeah. You know, she's had a lot of kind of, I'm going to say, rough treatment over the last decade because they keep on making her a crazy woman.
Yep.
But we just saw a really good issue of S.H.I.E.L.D. that
Mark Waid used her well. And it'll be interesting. So the writer on this is James Robinson, who has been hit and miss, but has had some hit stuff lately.
Yeah.
Like, he did a good job with his Secret Wars start, for at least the first issue.
Yeah. He's actually working on a couple of them.
I hope it's a lot like Airboy.
And then there's Airboy, his super R-rated... crassly autobiographical comic. The painted art cover by Kevin Wada. They don't say who the interior artist is, so
they may not know yet.
Has a new costume to her that seems to be more reflective of maybe her gypsy ancestry or crony ancestry.
And not as hard to draw as all the George Perez ones.
Yeah, although it's still got some detail in
it. Does.
It
does.
She has an elaborate sort of headdress, but it's like sort of jeweled now.
Is that an M for
And for Magneto,
it's a little bit.
Or
yeah,
a
class
W for Witch.
I think it's a W for Witch. An upside down W.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
It
actually,
looks like an M. But it's a neat costume. This is my pick because I'm hoping for them to for her to kind of get renewed as a character.
Yeah,
she can. She has a lot of possibilities, and
I feel like Robinson as a writer who at least has the potential to delve into that solo character, into her lost, unused depth.
She's never had a solo book before, has she? Even a miniseries, I don't think.
She's never had a miniseries.
At the height of the '90s, she might have had a mini, but I don't know if she did.
I feel like she's had one.
She's never had an ongoing before. I know that. So that's new. Nick, your next pick?
I can also probably say that this person has never had an ongoing either.
But he's had miniseries.
But he has had miniseries. Fine.
For sure.
No, this is a Vision.
The other half of the power couple.
The other half of the power couple. And honestly, these people are getting their books because of the Avengers, Age of Ultron.
Yeah, it's weird that Scarlet Witch, there's no Quicksilver book. But
there is no Quicksilver. What do you
wonder
do?
Why that
I wonder
is.
Why. But again, this is also a great creative team behind this book. You have Tom King, who is half of the Book of Grayson.
Yep.
So he's going to be the writer on it. If he can bring that sort of craft to this book, I have high hopes for it. And Gabriel Walta, which I am not super familiar with, but I looked him up, and he was actually one of the artists who's working on Magneto.
Okay.
So, and I flipped through those books. I don't know if what I've seen where it was exactly his art style, but I think what I saw, if that is... will work
that's
very well with Vision.
Team. You know, Vision's kind of a hard character to pin down. I usually think of him as being like a slightly icier version of Spock.
Well, the quote for this one says, a bold new vision for the Marvel Universe. And I kind of hope it sort of delves into his kind of humanity and him trying to figure things out a little bit. Just more in depth of the character.
Yeah.
Because we've seen him work in groups, and he is kind of... He always gets thrown to the side, sort of like Martian Manhunter in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
In a weird way, that's actually kind of a role I like for him.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how well he'll handle a solo book, but I'm interested to see what they're going to do.
But I mean, everybody who saw Age of Ultron was like, oh my god, Vision is my new favorite character. So this makes perfect sense. And if they can capitalize on that with a great, focus on that character, it'll be really, really interesting. And I have to say, the cover art, which I hope he continues to do all the art cover art, is going to be Marcus Martin.
Yeah.
Which, dear God,
That cover's great.
Daredevil.
Yeah. It's a great cover.
We love him to pieces.
Yes,
we do.
We
do love him to pieces.
All right. Mine is a surprise because I did not expect... I don't like this character. I didn't really expect to like this book. But All New Wolverine number one, which is X-23 as Wolverine... And I'm not a huge X-23 fan, but nor am I a huge Wolverine fan, to be honest. But the writing is by Tom Taylor, who's been doing Injustice, which is great.
Yeah.
And the art is by David Lopez, who has always been good. He's on Captain Marvel most recently, but I remember him from Fallen Angel.
Was he on Catwoman?
He might have done some Catwoman.
Okay.
Yeah. But his art is amazing, and he's going to be a good fit here, so... I'm looking forward to this book.
You know, I went back and looked, because when I saw that X-23 was sort of filling those shoes of Wolverine, I went back and looked and see how many X-23 books I actually owned or have read.
Yeah.
And I have read a good portion of them.
She's a popular character, just not with me.
Ever since NYX, that Joe Quesada did, and brought her into sort of the Marvel Universe in a very weird way. I think they've since then done a lot of good with that character, and...
I have read only a handful of stories, and at least a few of them have been pretty good, so... she's a character that is not particularly on my radar, but I've seen good stuff done with her. So,
and I have to say, I like the costume. The costume works really well with her.
It's not bad. It's not
bad.
It's
good design.
Yeah, it's a spin on Wolverine's classic blue and gold costume.
Yep.
Dave.
Next up for me is Spider-Woman number one. This one was kind of a no-brainer. It's the same creative team, right?
Yep.
So, writer Dennis Hopeless, artist Javier Rodriguez. Big thing that the cover seems to depict is that she appears to be very pregnant. So that 8 months jump ahead seems to imply that at some point in the Secret Wars she had some fun.
Or maybe post, because 8 months.
Maybe
she's 8 months.
Yeah,
I think she's
true.
8 months pregnant.
That's true.
So we're wondering who the dad is.
Right.
Hoping it's Grizzly.
And assuming everything is exactly what it looks like. For all I know, she is a surrogate mother for some sort of experiment. Going on. I mean, there's actually a lot of possibilities, but it does, the tagline is parent by day, hero by night.
Yeah.
I guess that wouldn't necessarily preclude, I mean, she could be fostering some kid or something like that.
No, I think she's actually pregnant.
It could be the weird thing where you, Carol Danvers got pregnant by her own son back in the 70s.
I hope it's not that.
By Marcus.
I joked and said it was Ben Urich's, but that's a little weird.
That would be a little weird, yeah. Ben Urich is like 80 and she's like.
And married.
No,
he's. I usually thought of him as probably being 50.
Yeah. I don't think he's married. Didn't his wife get killed by the king?
Oh, did she? I thought she was still alive.
I thought she got killed.
I don't know.
If his wife gets killed by the kingpin, then Daredevil can never forgive that because he's Ben Urich's best friend.
I don't think she was killed by the kingpin. I think.
Okay, maybe I misremembered.
I think she's alive. She dies. She has a disease in the movie.
Right. Or
show, rather. But I think she's still alive. She's threatened a lot by the kingpin.
But anyway, Spider-Woman has been an excellent comic and had some of my favorite art of the whole year. So obviously, I'm just going to read whatever they do next.
Yep, that is one of my favorite comics as well, and I'm excited to see it back.
Nicholas? Yes.
Okay, the next one is a no-brainer, and we've mentioned it before, so I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it. But it's a character who can't sustain an ongoing to save his life sometimes.
Yep.
But it is Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Written by Jason Aaron. Art by Chris Piccolo. And I have to say, he's brandishing an axe on the cover.
Yep.
I know we've seen art with him with bow and arrow and a few other weapons, so they're definitely sort of taking a different turn on this.
Yeah.
He's not going to use his magic as sort of, you know, an always kind of thing.
You actually read a little bit about this.
Yeah, there was an article, an interview floating around with Jason Aaron about it, and he said he wants to go more superhero with the character.
He's always been a guy who's a little bit on the fringes of the Marvel Universe,
yeah.
And as they prepare for the movie, I can understand why they'd want to make him a little bit more overtly aligned with the superheroes.
And they're bringing him to the forefront. I mean, I think he's going to come back in a big way, and I really want his ongoing to work, because he is such a great character, and, 20 years has gone by since he's had his own, an ongoing book?
It's been a while.
I mean, Vaughn did the great miniseries that if you haven't read, you need to read.
Doctor Strange the Oath.
Yep. But no, I'm excited to see what Jason Aaron and Chris Piccolo. I love his art. I think
so. He's hit and miss for me.
He is very hit and miss. I think he's one of the best Spider-Man artists that I've seen when he works on that character.
But his storytelling is sometimes a touch Byzantine.
Yeah,
breaking out the big words.
Right. But he's right.
It would be Byzantine or labyrinthine or one of those words.
You need the big words because Piccolo does the artistic equivalent of big words.
And I think that actually works perfectly for Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what they can bring to the table.
Also, the last time Aaron and Piccolo worked together was on Wolverine and the X-Men, and that was the best stuff that Piccolo had done in a long time.
I completely forgot that because I wasn't reading that book at the time.
That book was great.
I confess, I'm slightly nervous about weapon packing Doctor Strange.
Ditto.
We'll see.
But I'm curious. Aaron has done a pretty good job for me.
Yeah,
I've realized I like a lot of his writing.
He deserves a shot. Yep, sure.
All right, I'm changing a little bit. I originally was going to pick a different book, but I realized I don't like that artist.
Last minute change. Drama.
So... the book I'm going to talk about is Captain Marvel number 1. And I know a lot of people are sort of disappointed that Kelly Sue DeConnick, the character's creator, not technically a creator because somebody else created Carol Danvers in the 70s, but really, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers is a different character.
The new vision of her.
Kelly Sue DeConnick is leaving the book. She's been doing it for a while. And I was never as 100% on board Kelly Sue DeConnick's take. I liked the character, but I wasn't liking her writing of it. So I'm excited about the change, especially because the people they're bringing in are Tara Butters and Michelle Fazekas, who are the creators, the showrunners of Agent Carter.
Right.
Which was great. And has its feminist cred, just as Kelly Sue DeConnick does.
Yep.
And then the art is by Chris Anka, who's stunning and just gets better with every book. The only pitch here is Captain Marvel Rises. So I don't know what the difference is going to be. She's backed up.
Very space oriented,
but it's almost like she's got the essentially like a core behind her, like the Nova Corps,
the Carol Corps,
or it's probably going to be the Carol Corps.
Well, they've got A's, they've got big A's on there, so maybe Space Avengers. I don't know, but
which is a big thing,
or it could
from
the A Force.
It is a big thing from Secret Wars. She actually does have her own core, own sort of fighter squadron.
Yep.
So if we do see more things from Secret Wars carry over, that could be something that does.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, the notion of the Carol Corps was just a name for her fans at first. Right?
Yes, it was.
And is it sort of meta-contextually crossed over into the thing where she's now like actually has her own?
Yeah.
Because I haven't read the Secret Wars stuff. her own legion of troops or whatever.
Yeah, she's got like a squadron of like six or seven people who
are like pilots.
Yeah, they're pilots.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's kind of fun. I like
Who's the artist on that?
Chris Anka, who is really good.
Remind me of...
He's done a bunch of stuff. I remember him going back to the first X-Men First Class stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't remember what he's working on right now. But he's...
I was just trying to envision his style. Yeah.
All right, Dave, what's next up on your list?
Next up for me is Karnak number one,
yep.
Taking the somewhat obscure Inhumans martial artist who has like the power to... You know, sense the weakness of like a target or a structure. Like, you know, he can knock, he doesn't always like super strong, but he could like, you know, explode a brick wall because he would know the precise point to hit it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Warren Ellis, the tagline is just the flaw in all things. I'm sure it's like the flaw in the wall, the flaw in his own
flaw in society.
Psyche, yes. Warren Ellis is writing Gerardo Zaffino on art. I don't know
that artist.
I just had to Google the that name.
Yep.
And nothing's really popping up except for some of the artwork that he's done. And the artwork is just stunning.
It's nice looking. Well, we were just talking about how when Ellis picks his own writer artist, which he almost always does, he generally picks well.
And he brings artists into the community that then make the art community stronger.
Karnak is a character that, I haven't been closely following the Inhuman stuff in Marvel Universe lately, so I don't know quite how he's been treated lately. I've liked the character well enough as a supporting player in, Fantastic Four stories featuring the Inhumans and stuff in the past. But the big draw here for me is Warren Ellis, and I just want to see what his spin is going to be.
Yeah. It'll be fun for about six issues, and then someone else take over.
I mean, I hope that's not the case, but I mean, it was the case with Moon Knight.
Yeah, he always gets bored of Moon Knight, but he always does a good setup for somebody else.
Sure. If he does it, if it's anything like, say, the last really fun superhero book he did for me was maybe about 5 years ago when he did his Thunderbolt run.
Yeah.
And that was a good solid, 10 or 12 issues.
12 issue run, yeah.
Essentially did tell a complete story in it, and so I was always very happy with that run.
Yeah.
Even if he just did, 10 issues and set this up, it could still be very good.
Well, how many issues do you need of Karnak, really? I'm sure
they're hoping for more than 10.
Sure, but I'm just saying, whatever Ellis has, I'm sure he has a story to tell.
Right.
And I'm perfectly good with it being a short story.
Do we know if any of these might be miniseries?
I'm sure that they're planning for some of them to get canceled.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if any of these are definitively
set up
miniseries.
As? I don't
they
know.
They don't portray them as that.
Yeah, they all look like ongoing. Yep. So what you got, Nate?
To keep in the Inhumans line, I'm actually going to pick Uncanny Inhumans number one.
Yep.
If you need any more indication of the Marvel wanting this to be one of their biggest sellers right in the forefront, this team of writer and artist should tell you. It's Charles Soule, who's basically one of Marvel's big writers right now, and artist Steve McNiven from Civil War.
And the two of them work together on Death of Wolverine.
Yes, Death of Wolverine. They're working on Civil War for Secret Wars. Or no.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. Completely different. But Charles Soule is.
Yeah.
But this is a new team. The image we have is captioned, "The Silence is Broken."
But I see Medusa, I see Black Bolt, Triton.
New character that I don't know, and the Human Torch.
Human Torch, that's right.
And we know from Free Comic Book Day that Medusa and Human Torch are a couple.
Interesting.
So I don't know where that leaves Black Bolt, and I know...
Man, Human Torch has Inhuman Fever. he did a Crystal.
Yeah.
Now he's dating Medusa.
Watch out, Triton.
Watch out, Triton. Once you go Fishman, you never go back.
Correct. Now, and I actually just... I've loved the one issue... Or the zero issue they put out was fantastic, and I'm just liking the Inhumans at the moment. I've always loved Black Bolt, so he's sort of the central character for me. You know, it's weird that a central character is a guy who doesn't speak. But
it's a unique challenge for the writer.
But it says the silence is broken. Maybe he speaks now.
Yeah, that's possible. He speaks in Secret Wars. Whether or not he can now speak is
a possibility. Because he used to, he could only like sort of be very imperious.
Yep.
But what if he's like all sassy? Who knows what his
sassy Black Bolt
is like? I don't think there's any version of a Black Bolt that is sassy.
Not even on all the infinite alternate.
You don't think Black Bolt's gonna be like girlfriend?
No.
You are not dating the Human Torch.
You are not dating the Human Torch.
No, not even close.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't think Will Smith's gonna play in the movie?
Dear God, no.
Do we have any idea what the team is gonna be doing? Are they gonna be being monarchs? Are they gonna be adventurers?
They're breaking silence, so they're gonna go around libraries.
I would have to imagine there's going to be sort of a Game of Thrones sort of vibe for power, because Medusa was queen of the Inhumans, ruling over Attilan. Black Bolt coming back. I don't know what that means, if he's going to reassert himself. So it should be interesting. And there's also all the new Inhumans that have been popping up. What to do with them, and if they're gathering them like they have been.
They could form their own new civilization with them.
That's true. They could have a new Attilan.
A new Attilan, yeah.
Maybe, is that the big spoiler in Game of Thrones? Robert Baratheon can come back from the dead and become the king again? They don't deal with a lot of that kind of thing in the Game of Thrones. You don't have kings die and then come back.
It's true. Randy, what is your last or
maybe second last? Second to last. Penultimate.
Penultimate.
Not the Ultimates, but the Penultimates. That is All New, All Different Avengers number 1, which we saw a preview on Free Comic Book Day.
Yes.
It's Mark Waid on writing, Adam Kubert on art, alternating with Mahmoud Azrar. The cover art is by Alex Ross, and it's a really nice cover.
It is.
And this is the team of sort of more established Avengers, and then it's got Vision and Sam Wilson as Cap and whoever is Iron Man. And then it's got the female Thor, Miss Marvel, and Miles Morales. And it's a weird team for the Avengers, but I really like that first issue that they did in Free Comic Book Day.
So do we think there will be like the adventures of the main Avengers and their trainee team?
Yes, this is the trainee team, I think. Because there is also...
Is it just them, or is it going to also feature their mentors?
There's an Uncanny Avengers team, there's a New Avengers team, there's an Ultimates team.
That's right, they've got lots
But I think this is the main Avengers book.
Okay, like, unless they adopt something else at San Diego,
This looks like the main Avengers book. It does have a lot of the key characters. I mean, it's got Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man, and the Vision. It's just that it also happens to have Ms. Marvel and Miles Morales,
What's
Ultimate Spider-Man.
What's the tagline for this?
It says Earth's Mightiest Heroes, but it's crossed out and says Most Dedicated. So it seems like a little bit of that Justice League International
thing. They're
hard triers. Yes. The Earth's Most Hardest Triers. This was really a fun first issue, seeing sort of the old guard put the new kids through their paces and teach them how to be heroes in a team. And Mark Waid has just been on fire lately.
Yeah, because the whole purpose of that first story was them sort of, you know, not really catching the bad guy, but saving people and being heroes.
Yeah.
So I'm all for that in an Avengers book.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to this. Avengers is one of my... Avengers is my favorite team book, and it has not been a book I've wanted to read for, like, 2 decades. So it's really exciting to me. Even if this is still not what I want from the Avengers, it's much closer to what I want to read in the Avengers.
Randy, would you... For you, peak Avengers is superior to, say, peak X-Men?
Peak Avengers for me is definitely my favorite book of all. I mean, it's up there with, like, Suicide Squad is my favorite comics. Like, Roger Stern's Avengers is totally one of those runs that if there's a fire in my house, that's what I'd be saving.
I think I would, just because I grew up with it, I'd probably, if it had to choose between, say, like, the Claremont Byrne X-Men and the Stern Buscema Avengers,
yeah.
I would slightly lean towards the X-Men.
And I would definitely slightly lean toward Avengers.
Interesting. Always good to bring up the burning house metaphor.
Yeah. unless you're just tempting fate. Dave, what is your final choice?
It's an X-Men book.
Of course it is.
That was my stealth lead.
Nice segue. Stealth segue.
Set it up. Now let me burn this thing to the ground. So this is Extraordinary X-Men number 1.
They gotta stop coming up with different adjectives.
I know. I have not read X-Men books in a while. They got a little too unwieldy for me. I mean, they had been that way for a while, but there's simply too many kind of what I would consider core teams. And this is still continuing that sort of approach, but it's a team I like, and the creative team is one that interests me. So Jeff Lemire is writing.
Yep.
Of course, I'm really loving his work on Descender. Other stuff he's written has been somewhat hit and miss for me as far as grabbing me, but I want to see what he's going to do. And then Umberto Ramos is on art, and I've enjoyed him on Spider-Man, where he's done a lot of work over the last few years.
Yep.
But it's going to be that slightly more cartoony look. And the team is comprised of X-Men seemingly from a variety of eras.
Yeah, my guess is different dimensions.
Yeah, I think this is...
It looked like a Stealth Exiles book.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this is actually going to be holdovers from Secret Wars, from the different worlds.
That makes sense.
Because the Colossus and...
Yeah, let me just quick run down the lineup. Storm looks like it might be regular Storm.
No, it's a different Storm. It's a different costume. I think she's from somewhere else.
I just figured she changed costumes.
And she might be from A-Force. Or
Years of Future Past.
Let me just reel off the names. Storm, Iceman, Colossus. I think that's magic, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Old Man Logan, which is definitely from Secret Wars.
Yep.
Young Jean Grey, which is probably from
All New X-Men.
All New X-Men. Yep. And Nightcrawler?
Nightcrawler's from Age of Apocalypse, I bet.
Is that Age of Apocalypse?
I'm almost sure.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it.
You know, I was looking at Colossus, who has a beard in this. Would it be like a metal beard, like
the Stairs kind of thing? I think he's from Inferno.
I was looking at it with a customer yesterday, and we were trying to figure out, because there's a hard light falling upon them, does he have a streak of white in his hair?
Yeah, he does.
Or is that just light hitting?
No, he has a streak of white in his hair.
It's either from Years of Future Past.
I bet you're right. I bet he's from Years of Future Past, and then Inferno, the magic is from Inferno.
I think that's actually the current look for magic.
I think she's from Inferno, though. We'll see. But I think Storm's from somewhere else, and I just don't know where. I'm not sure where Iceman is from, but I think they're all from different worlds from Secret Wars.
It does weird me out a little bit about the young Jean Grey and Old Man Logan.
That's a little weird.
It's kind of an odd combination.
Yep. Well, they're gonna really explore the Lolita aspect of it.
I don't assume that they're going to necessarily be a couple.
Well, she's got her arm on his. There's a little bit of a...
you're right.
Unless they do something really weird where you all know how Logan always bonds with like the youngest girl on the team. Mm-hmm. If they do a Kitty Pryde Wolverine thing, which would be really weird, given the romantic history they have, it'd be very strange.
And the only other thing I thought of is like, is she trying to hold him back? Like, don't go and gut them, Old Man Logan.
Maybe. I don't know.
You're right. There is something.
There's an affection
the
to it.
The tagline is still hated, still feared, still standing.
Yep.
So there's not a lot to go on as to exactly what this team will be doing. Essentially, what this is, my interest is part X-Men interest in general, always looking to see if X-Men can win me back, and part Jeff Lemire interest. I like the creative team on it. So.
Yeah.
I don't know whether this is there's just a haze around them of like a fog or something like that. So I don't yet know if this is going to be on some alternate world, if it's on Marvel world, that could be Inhumans.
Who knows?
What do you call it? The Terrigen Mists?
By the way.
That actually could be very...
I would like to... The Inhumans reminds me. Let's go ahead and put to rest this rumor that Marvel's ditching the X-Men. There are like 8 X-Men books in this book.
There really are.
So this whole, they're ditching the X-Men to spite Fox, they're getting rid of them? No. The Fantastic Four thing might be true. Because they've broken up the FF and only Human Torch and Thing are here and they're in different teams.
Well, but, it seems like the X-Men, if nothing else, are simply too lucrative.
Yeah.
Whether they wanted to or not.
Yeah, so that is not happening. That was rumors.
I think there may be big changes to the X-Men world. But
there are like 8 X-Men books in
here. They're definitely not getting rid of it.
Anyway, that's my final book. Nick, what you got?
All right, my final book is a weird one, like all my other picks. this is actually Squadron Supreme number 1. Writer James Robinson, who is apparently taking over a lot of Marvel.
Yep, I hope this is like Airboy 2.
Yes, but art on this is actually going to be Leonard Kirk, who's done tons of stuff.
Did he do JSA?
He did JSA for a long
JSA,
while.
But he's done other
things.
He's
a great artist.
He kind of does classic superheroes, but in a sort of modern style. He's really excellent.
This is in our Exiles-y book. It's got a lot of different world versions.
And cover art is going to be Alex Ross,
who always loved Squadron Supreme.
Yes. The tagline for this one is "Soul Survivors of Their Own Worlds." They'll do anything to protect this one. So it definitely is sort of the people from another world sort of coming together.
Yep.
I like that gives them a little bit of focus, seemingly.
Yeah.
Because the Squadron Supreme, like, without focus, kind of could just be like another superhero team.
Yeah, because it feels... Agreed. I mean, it looks very much like this is our world's Hyperion. So non-villain,
probably from Hickman's Avengers.
Probably Hickman's Avengers. We have Squadron Supreme from
Supreme Power.
Supreme Power. We have Night Owl, Nighthawk. Doctor Spectrum from
another world. Female Doctor Spectrum.
Thundra.
That's Thundra. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know who this person on the end is supposed to be.
I can't tell either.
And then this woman over here.
I don't know who that is either. Looks like Moonstone, but I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it's Moonstone. But anyways, if it's anything like Exiles, which I had a huge fondness for.
Yeah.
I am very excited for it.
Does sound like, unlike Exiles, they won't be world-hopping, though.
Yeah.
They're trying to protect this one from, like... It's like they're all Supermans of their world.
Yeah, they lost their world, and they don't want this world to end.
Truthfully, it's exactly what Squadron Supreme has always been. It's an analog for the Justice League.
But it's not, because that's not the team. I mean, I guess Thunder could be their Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it's Thunder, Wonder Woman, Dr. Spectrum is their Green Lantern.
More like Thunder Woman.
I mean, it very much still is.
Are there 7 of them? There's 6, right?
There's 6.
Okay, so it's not quite the Justice League.
Although they could also be holding out for some reveal.
They could.
But
Aquaman's in it.
Yeah. For me, I love their Hickman's version of Hyperion, and I always like to see Thundra. So
yeah, it's too bad. Yeah, if they put like Namor in there as their Aquaman type,
that
and then
would be awesome.
they could have all of them Then they need, what, a Flash and a...
is Flash traditionally from another world, or I don't know...
She is from another world. She comes from another dimension.
No,
she's from a dimension where the, sort of the women, it's a
matriarchy.
Matriarchy,
oh,
yeah.
So, I'm sure originally handled with the deftest and lightest of touches.
All the care you would expect from a man writing in the 70s, yes.
Yes.
Randy, what is your final pick?
My final pick is Daredevil number one, and Daredevil is one of these books where I was like, okay, I've probably had enough Daredevil for a while, because Wade has done it to perfection. Brubaker was good. Bendis was good. I was like, you know, it's probably time to take a break. And then they put Charles Soule on it, who not only is a really good writer, but he's a practicing lawyer, although probably not anymore, because there's no way he's got time to have caseload with all the books.
I thought you were going to say he would have to have been disbarred for having written comics or something.
No, he's doing like 8 books. So I think he might not be practicing anymore, or not as fully. But anyway, he knows the law, and he wrote She-Hulk, and it was great. And I'm hoping he'll bring some of the legal stuff to it. But he's also got Daredevil, it's called The Devil's Apprentice. And there's a guy in there who is not Gambit, despite the fact that he looks exactly like Gambit.
Oh, do we know he's not Gambit?
He's not Gambit. They've said he's not Gambit.
Huh.
Who is sort of his young protege. And the art is by Ron Garney, who runs the gamut from sort of great to mediocre.
Yeah. In recent years, I feel like Garney, as an artist who's been around since, what, 90s,
80s? 90s at least.
I feel like he's been able to kind of move forward a bit with the times, though, and yeah. I've seen some really nice stuff from him.
Well, so. The cover here looks great. The Daredevil costume looks like there's a little more black in it. I don't know where Wade's status quo is going to leave things with him. I don't know if he's still in San Francisco. It doesn't look like it. This looks like New York.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to see where you pick up from such a beloved run and what you do and why that guy looks so much like Gambit.
At least one thing seems to be clear is that they are swerving a bit and throwing, you know, a curveball with the trainee. So they're not going to just try and continue precisely in his footsteps.
Here's the thing. Gambit is not an apprentice. He actually is a master of what he does. So.
Right. But if he were to become like a, you know, he's like kind of like a thief and rogue. If you were to become like a full-on hero or learn how to protect a city, like kind of that Daredevil tries to do, he would require. But we know it's not Gambit.
No,
right?
It's not Gambit.
Yeah, it's not Gambit.
Gambit is the best he is at what he does. And what he does is drink hurricanes and hit on underage women,
or go to Burning Man,
or go to Burning Man. So. As always, there's a lot more in here. We didn't cover everything, and there's a lot of stuff. I mean, notable things like Spider-Gwen is going to be back for sure. Amazing Spider-Man is back with Peter Parker in a very different role.
Yeah, he's going to be like globe-hopping and stuff.
Spider-Man 2099 is back with a new costume.
Uncanny X-Men is actually going to be a villain team with Magneto back in his pink and purple, or red and purple.
Silk returns, Ant-Man returns, Miss Marvel returns. Lots of interesting stuff. Pick these up. There's good stuff in here. But the Spectrum. We're always a Spectrum.
Yes.
Nick, you are the most excited for this, I believe.
I am super excited.
I am sort of middling level excited. There's stuff I'm not as crazy about, but there's a lot of stuff I'm looking forward to. And Dave, I believe you're somewhat skeptical overall.
Right. They're making enough changes that I feel a little removed from where they're headed with it. The creative teams are strong enough to make me, of course, want to take a look. But yes, I am cautiously pessimistic.
All right, and I am cautiously optimistic, and Nick's just optimistic.
Yes. Yep.
We need someone who's actually just pessimistic. I bet the internet will fill that role. all right, so that about wraps up our look at all new, all different Marvel. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that, and you can check out these books as long as we still have them at the store. And we'll be back in just a minute to talk about the best week of comics yet for 2015.
Allegedly.
All right, it is comics for the week of Wednesday, July 8th, and again, I'm going to put forward possibly the best week of comics of 2015. We don't know. We don't have charts yet.
Right, but we'll get them.
We will do the analysis. We'll go down to my war room, and I will pull up all the holographic interface.
We have a big board.
It's a good week for comics.
Yeah.
So we all have cheater picks, but let's start with our main picks. Dave, kick us off.
Okay. First up, Star Wars Lando.
Man, the Star Wars books are so good.
I'm so happy it came out well, because I was like, I really wanted it to be good.
Yep.
But I was just mentioning a minute ago while we were off air that I sort of thought they were going to play it a little bit more broadly. You know, Lando was going to be a little bit of a slight caricature of himself.
Yeah.
Sort of real womanizy, real swashbuckler and roguey.
Yeah.
And he those elements are, you know, in there, but they're written in, like, as Charles Soule writes, and you know, he's been on my radar since he really did a good job with Death of Wolverine.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's been doing a lot of other good books lately. And he writes a Lando that is very charismatic and readable, but is also kind of sly in a more subtle way than I expected. It does, however, begin with Lando in bed with a woman.
Yep.
And, you know, Randy, I think you nailed it when you said he's Danny Ocean.
It's Danny Ocean as played by Billy Dee Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he is the Lando you know and love. Very much they play up that this is a guy who, you know, well, to begin with, he's down on his luck, of course.
Yep.
Lando seems to be a guy who gambles and loses.
He lost the Falcon.
And then tries to...
He doesn't have Cloud City yet.
And is, like, always kind of struggling to get back, but kind of always has this bravado that's fun to go with.
Yeah.
So he is trying to figure that out. The big character hook in this was that he is decidedly, like, not a fighter, though.
Yeah. That was really interesting.
And they handle it in some really interesting ways, because he does get into some situations that they're going to, you know, involve, you know, potentially violence or, you know, danger and stuff like that. It's still a Star Wars book. But
he's a thinker.
He thinks around it and kind of in fun ways. But you can also tell he's putting himself in. He's getting it over his head sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
He's taking big risks that are maybe not going to pay off.
I will say, I loved this book to no end, and I honestly think my favorite character in the entire book is Lobot.
They gave Lobot a character. The first thing you see Lobot, he says, but the risks you take, brother. it was great. I mean...
Yeah. I'm just remembering in my head the version of Lobot that is just kind of... Doesn't say much.
He seems like a robot.
I remember having his...
I don't think he ever said anything in the movies. He just gestured.
I remember never having his toy being like... He's a cool looking
toy. He looked cool.
But I don't know what to do. Here, Charles Soule has given him such a great personality and just kind of broadened the spectrum of what Lobot can be.
Well, he's like, he's his, if you extend the metaphor, he's the Brad Pitt. Yeah, he's the thinker of the two. Yeah. He's the guy who doesn't so much go by his impulses, but who, you know, is more of a planner. And he has a computer implant in his head that he can hack with.
Right, they mentioned a little touch about his backstory into it. You know, in the I never had the toy, never particularly cared about the character. And you know, by the way, I did not. I was telling Nick,
you were a no-lot. You were a no-bot.
I thought that I thought that there were many Lobots. That is to say, it was a role where you kind of would get your head shaved, you would get some kind of cybernetic implant, and then you would be like there a walking supercomputer.
No, man, there's only one Lobot.
But there is clearly only one Lobot.
You are a no-bot. Nick and I are pro-bots.
Are you done?
Nope.
More like Robot. More like a go-bot.
Oh.
More like a ho-bot. Anyway.
Alrighty.
So Lando, the other thing he solves in this is he's the kind of guy who seems like a solo flyer, and by having a buddy backing him up and picking a character that really has never been anything done with it except maybe in, like, the novel.
Oh, I'm sure in the expanded universe he's got kids and wife.
Yeah. Drives an Imperial Walker.
So long, Dad.
But anyway, it gives somebody for Lando to bounce off of. You know, he can explain his plans, he can bicker with him, and yet they seem like best buds. I really liked Lobot as well.
Yeah.
They also introduce I don't know if she'll play any sort of...
I think she's the James Bond opening scene.
She's probably
girl.
The James Bond opening scene, but the woman he is romancing is a Grand Moff, just like Tarkin was, like an Imperial governor or governess. And there's interesting stuff that happens there. There is people that, you know, his creditors are shown.
Yep.
His enforcers are shown.
Yeah, he picks up a crew.
Yeah, that's right. He puts
Randy's, his Randy's comparison to Ocean's 11 is actually becoming more and more true.
I think it's absolutely an influence here.
I'm just remembering the opening sequence to the new Ocean's 11. It's like them getting a scheme. Them gathering their crew.
Yep. Well, that's because it's a standard heist.
It is.
You introduce the characters as some kind, you know, what they do.
Right.
You bring in, then you have them organize a crew, and then you have them do the job, and there's a complication.
The
complication.
The usual suspects.
Yeah.
Precisely follows that formula. The complication, which is kind of, I would say, is particularly revealed on the final page.
It's the last page.
Is an amazing complication.
It is.
Yeah, it really is.
I think all of us were like, that's amazing.
Yep.
Anyway, so...
And the art.
Recommendation.
Oh, we didn't talk about the art.
That's right.
This was my nervousness. I'm not always a big Alex Maleev fan.
Yes, you were poo-pooing him this morning.
I was poo-pooing him.
I was actually really waiting for it because of what he'd done on Hellboy more recently.
You are pro-Leave and I'm no-Leave.
That's true.
But...
I'm a Leave.
The art on this is great. The art is so good, and the colors by Paul Mounce are spectacular.
Okay, I was wondering who the colorist was.
Yeah,
there's a distinct look to it. It has a little bit of that look of sort of the Cloud City, like, you know, the whether they're sort of like often in darkness, but they're sort of colors illuminating from outside.
They're very bright hues.
Well, they're not. They're dimly drawn, but they're the colors are, you know, vibrant colors.
Very natural. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it is a spectacular look to it. I think they actually chose just right for the kind of the con man Star Wars character.
Yep.
Some of the other artists that they've chosen would be a little too action-adventure-y for this.
Yep. I was a skeptic, but now I'm a believer.
Believe was a good choice.
I'm a believer.
I was going to make the joke.
If you saw his face, now you're a believer. All right, let's
Nick.
Move on. Nick?
All right. Well, I think we've talked a lot about Charles Soule, but, you know, let's talk a little bit about
more of Charles Soule.
Yeah. He's doing another book, Shocking, this week, tying into Secret Wars. This one is Civil War, which I think is was an entry point for millions and millions of comic fans.
Lots of people love Civil War, and especially with it being the next Cap movie, it's a title people know.
Yes. And this has artwork by Lineal Francis Hugh, which I am not normally a big fan of.
I am sometimes yes, sometimes no, but usually no.
He's done some pretty amazing work here. He's gotten a lot. He's had a lot of lead time, and
I think Superman Birthright is what most people may be known for, right?
Are you forgetting the Ultimate Hulk versus Ultimate Wolverine?
You know,
I think that's what most people know him from.
The art.
Yeah, no,
no,
the art was not.
But
the problem.
Anyways. Charles Soule takes the idea of Civil War, basically Cap leading one part of the heroes, Iron Man leading the other, sort of fighting amongst each other over registration.
Yeah.
And basically Charles Soule utilizes that and a few other key events that have occurred in Marvel Universe.
Yeah, like around post-Civil War.
Post-Civil War, you know, Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion,
a few
Siege.
Others. Yeah. And basically does the best version of them I've ever seen.
Yep.
I don't know that any of us were huge fans of the original Civil War.
I'm not.
I think I could say I was a big fan of the art. Steve McNiven is a
very
talented
artist. I think I would at least acknowledge there's good bits in there, but I did feel like Mark Miller was trying to force a lot of square pegs into round holes. He forcing his plot to work.
But the big plot line for this one is...
But this seems like it's working better.
Yeah, but a big plot line is this, that the basically those two sides have continued on for years.
Well, they divided up the country.
Yeah, they've divided up the country.
In the West, Captain America rules a land of sort of anarchic freedom.
It's called the Blue.
And in the East, Iron Man has the Iron, which is a strictly enforced society. And this is about sort of peace talks between the two of them.
What is his section called?
It's called the Iron.
Yeah, Iron. And they've each got different heroes that have sided with them.
Man, his take on Peter Parker in here is great.
And I actually love the costume.
Yeah,
the costume works.
And his take on She-Hulk.
Yeah,
you know, I haven't read this yet, but this does speak to the kind of insight that I saw him pulling off in Death of Wolverine, where all those characters from Wolverine's past that he pulled in, every one of them that showed up, I was like, that character was dead on. That character was dead on.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't... He seems to get what these guys
are
about.
I will criticize Civil War in saying that it was... Not this book. I'm talking Mark Miller's
The original
Civil
one,
War,
yes.
As being very shock value.
Yeah.
Everything was very big and blatant. And less was taken to sort of character moments.
Yeah.
And you didn't get to spend a lot of time with those.
Yeah.
Here, Charles Soule gives you character moments.
Yeah.
The stuff with, say, Spider-Man and his family
is
amazing. I actually thought just seeing Cap and Iron Man sort of... these versions of the characters, I believe, being at odds for these reasons.
Yeah, that's the thing. Miller wasn't so concerned with motivation. He was concerned with his plot
but
and with his shocking moments.
Soule definitely took the motivation and ran with it.
Yeah.
And I feel has come out with the best version I've ever seen of it.
Yeah, this has really good world building, really good character stuff, and is just... And a good plot. I mean, the story as to what happens and what it's going to lead the story on
is
really good.
Is there war in this Civil War? Do we see some?
This is an attempt at peace.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what this plot of this issue focuses around.
A tentative peace.
Correct.
Yes.
Because it's been going on for, 10 years?
A long time, because Tony Stark has, silver hair now.
Right, that's true.
Based on y'all's talk and just that I like Soule, I'm going to definitely have to check it out.
I really liked this book, and I did not expect to.
No, I think it's great. And, like I said, the art is fantastic.
All right, so here's a surprise, or maybe not so much, given the how they've changed in the last few years. But my pick this week is Archie number one.
You are always picking Archie comics.
I know, right?
You know, whether it's Betty and Veronica's Double Digest or Jughead's Laugh Box. That sounds
Jughead's Laugh Box. I don't think Jughead's Laugh Box is what you think it is.
I'm struggling.
I am pretty sure Jughead's Laugh Box is on the internet.
Pleasure.
But
Archie, please don't Google Junkin's
Laughbox. Do not Google that.
You're gonna run into some Rule 34 real fast.
Do not Google that. Archie number one is by Mark Waid and Saga artist Fiona Staples.
We've been anticipating this for a few months.
And I think at least me and you, Dave. I don't know about you, Nick, but we were sort of like braced for it not to work.
Right, like I was
optimistic. I figured Mark Waid would get it.
Will he be able to capture a youthful voice? He's a great writer, but he's not known for like his strong.
But he old.
He did try it once before in the Legion of Superheroes, and although there was some decent stuff in there, it kind of felt like an old guy trying to be hip.
Right, he old like us.
And
so who knows if we're correct. We think it sounds youthful. But at any rate...
It's youthful in the stylized
way. It's a really good first issue. They break the fourth wall. Archie basically talks direct to the reader. It's about Archie and Betty and how they had this long relationship and they just broke up. And then there's this incident nobody knows about. And everybody in school wants them to get back together. And there's a scheme. And Jughead's his best friend and he's involved in the scheme. And Veronica is sort of teased, but not in there.
Now, plot-wise, that sounds like that could be a traditional Archie book.
But the approach is definitely not.
And here's what I think the approach is. This is ground floor. This is, like, restarting Archie.
Yeah.
But it's also in media res.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, into the middle of it.
Oh, I mean, it, like, feels right. Like it's ground floor in the sense that it's approachable, but it's also not like we're going to retell his origin.
No, but Veronica's not in the picture, so you don't have that dynamic. Right. But, I mean, you're not confused about any of these characters. I mean, Jughead, you could definitely know. Best friend.
Kind of interesting way.
Yeah. But, I mean, all the characters are in here that are part of Archie's sort
except
of
pantheon. Except for Veronica.
Except for Veronica. But, like, Kevin Keller is, and a few other people as well.
You know, Nick, you had mentioned this previous to the podcast that there is something of a John Hughes vibe to it.
Yeah.
And part of that is, if nothing else, because Archie breaks the fourth wall in the very casual way that Ferris Bueller does.
Yep.
But it's really fun. Like, that seems like to me like it could be tired or like it like could have stuck me as like novelty, but it works really well.
But it's sort of the best of John Hughes.
Also, their Jughead is great.
Yeah,
Jughead's always been a joke character, but Jughead is he's the guy who's sort of, smart enough to know what's going on.
Right. He's the best friend you want.
Yeah.
Right, he's got kind of something, there's more percolating in him than you would tend to think based on the traditional Archie.
Yeah. And it's got, as expected, just beautiful art. There's a scene of Archie playing guitar, which is just spectacular.
Yep. That's Fiona Staples.
Fiona
Staples,
yeah.
Also, they did put out kind of as a bit of a gimmick, like 20 different covers, literally 20 different covers.
And they're all so good.
But I have to say, like you can't pick a loser on them. They're all good.
Yeah. We ordered quite a few of these, and I'm going to be pushing this very heavily on people because I really dug
this. That easily should have been my pick this week.
Yeah, it's really good. And there's an ad for the Chip Zdarsky, Erica Henderson Jughead, which if I had to sacrifice Squirrel Girl to get that book, I guess I'll do it. Although I still won't be happy about
it.
I think I may have.
We'll see.
All right, so cheater picks. Dave?
My cheater pick is a much more serious book, but is yet another Mark Waid book this week, following that up.
Theme of this week, Mark Waid and Charles Soule.
Yep.
Give them the industry. Give it to them.
Strange Fruit. If you know your music history, you know that's a super famous song from famous soul singer, not soul singer, but blues singer. Why can't I say her name? Billie Holiday.
Yeah. Oh.
That was actually sung about lynchings in the South, and it's like a really darkly serious song, but one of those great American songs. Mm-hmm. It was like and sung at a time that people didn't want you didn't sing about that in popular music.
Yeah.
It does set the tone for this. It's set in the late Depression, I guess, or that's 1927.
It's like Dust Bowl era,
Dust Bowl era.
1927, yeah.
And beautiful, by the way, realistic painted art from J.G. Jones.
Gorgeous art.
If you're not familiar with him, you can somewhat picture Alex Ross's level of detail.
Yeah.
He worked on Final Crisis, all the covers to...
but this is stronger than anything he's done in quite a while.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And without giving a... I don't know how much we want to give away about the plot.
I think...
Other than that it is racially charged, because that era was racially charged.
Yep. Well, just to get people to take a look at, it starts out looking like very much a period piece. It's about sort of post-slavery, but still segregation, and they're still sort of treating black people as basically indentured servants. There's a lot of violence and threats of violence.
Right.
But there is a sort of supernatural thing that happens that seems to paint this as being sort of a revenge story to some extent.
Right. It's clearly going to be exploring race. It actually happens – it's weird to say. I don't want to say it's like, oh, it's so great and timely, because I don't want to say, yes, racism has suddenly become a headline, a major headline.
But it has.
But it has. And so this book feels very, it does feel very timely. I couldn't recommend it more highly. I think it's a really strong start, and I want to see where it's going.
Yep, I really like this. I did not expect to like this as much as I did.
Could easily have been my pick any other week. I just happened to love Lando so much.
You were taken in by his charms, his roguish charms.
The cheater pick that I believe Nick is about to make was also
is a cheater pick for all of us. Yes. Yeah.
Mine is, this is another Secret Wars book. This is 1872 number one, by, Jerry Dugan and artist Nick Varela, which basically, looks at a Old West town, and sort of doing the tropes of sort of, Tombstone and, but with Marvel characters, like the town sheriff is Steve Rogers and,
the kind of corrupt, is he the mayor or is he just
like he's like,
the local, like the biggest businessman.
Yeah, is Wilson Fisk.
Wilson Fisk. So yeah,
wasn't Doc Shaner going to do this art originally, or did he just do character designs?
I think he did character designs and things like that.
Which are great character designs.
Yes.
But yeah, no, the interior art by Nick Varela is quite good. Sort of the main character at the beginning is the character Red Wolf, which I'm not super familiar with.
He's one of their big Indian hero.
Yeah, Native American hero who, I'm gathering, was probably used in somewhat stock ways by artists or writers trying to, you know,
well-meaning writers.
Well-meaning writers in the 70s and 80s. I imagine that the new version, well, already this is a good version, but he's also going to have more of a role in the post-Secret Wars Marvel Universe. So, you know, this is, I think, priming readers for him to be a bigger player.
But for me, this is all about sort of seeing Jerry Dugan kind of come out of his shell. I mean, he's been writing Deadpool, but I haven't really seen him as, like, the... he's a good writer. This is bordering on becoming more than that. And it just is utilizing sort of small-time villains in cool ways and just this, the sort of moment-to-moment stuff in this.
Well, Wilson Fisk as sort of the Ian McShane character from Deadwood is great. Steve Rogers is the sheriff, and he's basically the noble sheriff. He's the Wyatt Earp. He's, you know...
But, you know, you see the Ben Urich character.
Yep, as a newsman.
Tony Stark, though, this is one of the funnest ones.
Yeah.
He's essentially the Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
He's the best friend who's a drunk.
Yep.
And it's kind of... That's actually a perfect, you know, for... Since Tony has his alcohol problems, casting him in that role is, like, perfect.
Yep.
But, and there's a great final page that, is amazing. I can't wait to see what they do with it. But overall, it's just a super fun book.
Yeah, it's a great Western. It's really good. Also, you know, the artist reminds me of a bit of Sean Murphy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, this
is, by the definitely way, his characters.
The kind of a reminder that Elseworld stories, which DC kind of gave up on. I mean, they give up on the imprint for sure, and I can't think of any particular Elseworlds they've snuck it in. This is a reminder of how good they can be.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I thought they were going to have a little more powers in this, but it's powers light, so it's more like the personalities behind your favorite Marvel figures as lensed through the Old West.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know, it is heightened. It's not like it's like real, you know, hyper-realistic or anything, but it's super fun even without the powers.
Yeah.
Like, one of the bruisers is Crossbones from Cap, and there's a ton of other awesome guest stars.
Yeah. Yep.
Randy, your cheater
pick? Yeah, my cheater pick is one that I think I'm the only one who's read this so far. Which is Spider Island number one. It's another Secret Wars book. Secret Wars is on this week. I think we picked three different Secret Wars this week. Spider Island is by Christos Gage and art by Paco Diaz. And it ties back to a Spider-Man event from a few years back where there was an infection that was turning everybody into Spider-Men. And it turned out that actually they were turning into half-Spider hybrids. And there's a queen who sort of mentally controls them. And what has happened in this is that these Spider hybrids have become sort of like zombies. They have overrun all of Manhattan, and the queen controls all of them, and all the superheroes have been taken over, except for our lead character, Agent Venom.
Oh, very cool.
Who resisted it, and Vision, who of course is an android and is not susceptible, and they have a really cool insider agent I won't give away, but it was a who transforms, and when he transforms, he loses the spider influence and becomes their sort of sleeper agent. But, they have a bunch of sort of spider-eyed superhumans. They have a lot of sort of zombie-ish. And it's all about them seeing if they can find a way to cure this infection As they're sort of losing this war, the Resistance is slowly but surely losing this war. Really interesting, really fun sort of world building, and if you like Agent Venom, it's a great use of him.
You know, here's a question. When Secret Wars ends, are we going to miss some of these alternate timelines?
I think we are, yes.
And I wonder if Marvel might capitalize on that. Like, might they follow up 1872 with more in that
alternate? I'm sure all of that is a possibility if they do well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know if, like, at the end, you know, Doom will crush all these alternate worlds, but I have to imagine they may keep the doors open.
Oh, I think they're going to have a spot. I mean, we know that Spider-Gwen's still going to be in her own universe, so they'll still have a multiverse.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the backup for those who are missing her is a set in the M2 universe, you know, with the Son of Juggernaut and Spider-Girl and all that stuff. And it is by Tom DeFalco with Sal Buscema on art, sort of the guys who did a lot of that stuff. So if you miss those characters...
I definitely know that there are some folks who had a great fondness for the
M2. There's a lot of those characters in there. On top of that, there's a whole bunch of other stuff, which another week, some of this stuff could easily have been my pick.
Yeah.
But I'll run through the stuff I have on my stack. Star Trek Green Lantern number one, which we all read. It's a pretty fun first issue.
Yeah.
I've got Born Home number one, which is a new sci-fi series with art by Jeff Johnson. Written by Plants vs. Zombies, Paul Tobin. It's just kind of an interesting science fiction adventure, sort of post-apocalyptic a little bit, but involves like a space fighter pilot and zombie-ish type characters. There's a lot of genre mix.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Max Fury Road number one, which is, I believe, a two-issue series looking at what Mad Max was up to between Thunderdome and Fury Road.
Oh, right. It does seem to confirm that the new movie does fall within the timeline of the original series, which I thought was interesting.
And as with all these Mad Max, it has really nice art. And I think Furiosa was sort of disappointing to a lot of us, but Mad Max is sort of back to the quality for me.
Good.
There's a new issue of Descender, number five, the penultimate issue of that first story arc.
Continues to be really good and takes some dark turns this one.
Yep. Starve, number two, which was Brian Wood and Denis Gilles-Zazel's... futuristic cooking competition show, which is very fun. I really like the second issue of that. Second issues of Squadron Sinister, Spider-Verse, Ghost Racers, Runaways, Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, and then there's a third issue of Secret Wars 2099, which I've been enjoying, and then Saga has a new issue, number 30. I believe that might conclude the current arc.
I believe it does.
I haven't had a chance to read everything because it's a huge week. And then finally, I am picking up the Storm Volume 2 trade paperback, which collects that short-lived but really great 12-issue series. Nick, what else is on your list?
Secret Wars continues to roll on with Age of Apocalypse number one, which was a big thing for people back in the 90s.
Yep.
So it's back written by Fabian Nicieza.
Yep.
We have the third issue to Warren Ellis and Declan Shelby's Injection. Third issue of Master of Kung Fu, which continues to be a lot of fun. The 42nd issue of Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Batman. And then I think I just have one more giant-sized hardcover.
Yep.
That is the Behemoth of East of West.
Which is me and Nick teasing you because we both bought the copies off the shelf.
It's true. Sorry.
Sorry about that. Sorry. So we'll have it next week.
But this is the Apocalypse Year One, which is kind of cool. They're going to collect it in years. So this is the first three volumes of the series, plus a lot of back matter.
Essentially like the Saga hardcover.
Yeah, it's the same size as the Saga hardcover. And you get script for the first issue, a bunch of timeline stuff, breaking down on sort of the different areas of the world, and another host of other stuff. It looks really, really great. I can't wait to sit down with it. Dave, what else you got?
I'm going to mention two Lovecraftian things first. Second issue of Alan Moore's Providence hits. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I like the first issue. It was very Lovecraftian sort of in the truest sense, which is to say it was a more of a story of like sort of academics and intellectuals and stuff. I'm starting to get to some weird places, but it was not like, you know, investigators shooting it out with Cthulhu. But there also this week was a graphic novel adaptation of The King in Yellow. Am I correct? Is that by the guy who's done some of the previous adaptations?
Same artist.
Mountains of Madness and stuff like that.
Yep.
And I can't remember. I've never read The King in Yellow. Is that the blanket title for the collection of short stories?
Yes. It was actually pre-Cthulhu to some extent.
Right, but influential.
And it became an influence of, yes.
Yeah, in fact, it's even mentioned in Providence.
Yes.
But, for those, whether you became fascinated with it through True Detective, or you're just a Lovecraft fan, almost certainly it'll be worth taking a look at that graphic novel. There's also Batman Superman 22, which continues Greg Pak's storyline of the sort of depowered and identity revealed Superman. In this case, he is teaming up with the Batman that is Gordon in the mech suit.
Yep.
And really liked the issue. It's another strong entry in it. He and Gordon don't particularly get along, but I like this sort of more assertive Superman that's going on right now. He also doesn't take any crap. All right. There is second issue of Constantine. I actually rather like the first one, so I'm going to check this one out.
Cool.
And the fourth issue of Rebels from Brian Wood, so some good, more good Revolutionary War era action.
It is a good time to be a comics fan.
Yeah, true. This is a very, very strong week.
All right, well, that'll about wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
Yo-Jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com.
Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx.
And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.